Welcome back to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Maryknoll. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Now, let's take a look at the daily struggle to educate our youth from the perspective of the dedicated teachers and support providers that are so essential to the success of any public school. The Bronx, New York, has earned a reputation as ground zero for all that ails our public school system. Insufficient funding, inadequate supplies, and overcrowded classes are just some of what our teachers are confronting in what has become the thankless task of educating our children. However, a large number of innovative educational approaches and programs have found a home in the Bronx public school system, and our producer, Michael Ramadan Jones, visited with two individuals, Dan Abramowski and Lauren Morse, who are doing their best to revitalize public schooling and community involvement through their work as a high school teacher and a community organizer in New York City's poorest borough. This is Voices of Our World.
Well, let's start with, why did you choose to become a teacher, and then how did you become a teacher?
So I guess the easy question is how I became a teacher. And, you know, went to college for international relations, but didn't want to get into international relations. And spent a couple of years with odd jobs, and then went back to school and went to teacher's college at Columbia, got a master's, and then started teaching. And that's how I got certified to teach.
And what subject do you teach?
I teach social studies, and the classes I teach are government and economics.
And what are the ages of the students you teach?
17, 16, 18. It's a 12th grade class.
And this is public high school here in New York City?
Yep, it's a small public school.
What kind of dynamic is there between the older teachers and the younger teachers? Is there a helpful dynamic in terms of their interaction?
I don't think there's really a divide between the older and the younger teachers. There's more of a divide between the hardworking teachers and the less hardworking teachers. And so there's younger teachers who are not very hardworking and not very good, and there's older teachers who are not very hardworking and not very good. But I think the teachers who work hard and really want the school to do well, whether they're old or young, all work together.
Is there an overall philosophy that the teachers try to put forth to the students? Does the school have a certain approach to education?
Yeah, we have a vision and a mission, and our school is a college prep school, which sounds like what every high school should be, but hasn't been the reality in the neighborhood where our school is. And so we focus pretty strongly on preparing students for college. And other than that, we're called Mount Haven Village Preparatory High School, and the village is part of it, and kind of the idea that we're not just educating a student to be good at math and science and reading, but we're educating a student to be a kind of well-rounded person who's involved in their community, and that it takes a community to educate a child. It's not just about a teacher and a student.
How do you reconcile the duality of the classroom education with what they're learning outside the class, especially at the age that you're dealing with in these teenagers, let's just say, who are able to sit in class in school for 8 hours, but then go home and go on the internet for 10 hours and learn maybe things that even contradict what you're saying in class?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, there's a lot of competition for attention and competition for what's important for students, but I think that's part of teaching, is kind of making what's important to them part of your class and making what's in your class important to them, and trying to find topics that are interesting and relevant. And so there's not, you know, I was learning about this in school and then I go home and I do something completely different. It's kind of bridge that gap so that they're not just unfocused and not, that there's not two different worlds.
But you definitely see technology as aiding in the educational process, not a distraction.
Yeah, I mean, the internet's great. I don't know what teachers did before the internet. I don't use a textbook and never have. And so anything I find is either from reading a paper or a magazine or a book that I've read sometime in my life, or from searching the internet for resources. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's a great resource. There's a lot you can do with the internet. I don't think just sitting kids on the internet and telling them to learn is going to work. You need to still have an activity and still have something going on. But it is a great tool.
How has your relationship been with the parents of your pupils?
It depends. You know, it's just like your relationship with every student is different. You can't kind of say all parents are this or all parents are that. I've had some... overall, I think my relationship has been positive. I think all of our parents care about the students. And you hear a lot of talk about parent-teacher conferences and preparing for the worst. I don't think I've ever had a bad conversation with a parent. They always want their students to do well. They always have the students' best interests in mind. I think what happens is there's not always a lot that can be done when a student is 17 years old And a lot of times the parents feel stuck and they're not sure what to do. They say, you know, I'm trying and I'm doing all that I can do, but he's 17 or she's 17 and they need to learn to do their work on their own. And they're getting old enough now that it's their responsibility. But I think the parents are committed to their students' education.
Do they see college as the next logical step in this progression? Is college their aim?
Yeah, by the time they're done with our school, it is. I don't know if coming in, if college is reality to them, but through the 4 years they spend with us, it becomes a reality. And I've done some research into what has happened to our graduates. 95% of them say they want to go to school. 95-100% of them say they want to go to college. In our first graduating class that's been out of school for 2 years, I think over 90% of them have enrolled in college. Fewer have stayed in college to get started, and they leave and they go back. But, you know, at least 90% of the students do enroll in college and see that as the next step after high school.
If you had to say there was one thing you've learned from your student, what have your students taught you?
You know, I think one of the things I learn from my students frequently is just about perspective. They see things in completely different ways. Every one of them has a very different perspective. And anytime I say something or we do an activity or we're watching a movie or we go on a field trip, their perspective is so much different from mine and from each other's. And it's a really interesting to keep that in mind, that there are that many different perspectives. And I think it's something that you don't see. And students have a really fresh and new perspective on, you know, on politics, if we're talking about politics, on economics, if we're talking about economics. And it's interesting to see that every day. I mean, I think there is enough money out there. I think it's a matter of prioritizing where that money goes. And I think the idea of having education funded through local property taxes is wrong and has done a disservice to students around the country. So I think, yeah, there's money out there. There's not, even with the economy going down, even with the crisis, there's plenty of money being spent on plenty of things around the world, you know, in this country that we could easily redistribute and put towards education and really prioritize education.
You're listening to Voices of Our World, a weekly program dedicated to the issues of human rights, poverty, and social justice around the globe. Visit our website at voicesofourworld.org to learn more about Voices of Our World and Mary Knoll. We just heard from Dan Abramowski about his life as a high school teacher in the Bronx. Our next guest, Lauren Morse, now provides us with a glimpse into how community action and involvement is essential for the betterment of our public schools.
My name is Lauren Morse, and I'm a community organizer in the Bronx.
Now, we've heard that phrase before, community organizer. What yeah. kind of community are you organizing?
Well, I work in the Bronx, about 10 blocks north of Yankee Stadium, mm-hmm. and I'm an education organizer. So I work with parents and members of the community on issues related to education reform. So that could be on organizing against budget cuts. Mm-hmm. So we talk a lot about funding and priorities. It could also be focusing on a specific school. And getting parents in that school to fight to make changes within the school. That could be really concrete things like cleaner bathrooms or more parent-teacher conferences, or it could be bigger issues like policy issues like teacher retention or professional development or all sorts of things.
What kind of trust do you need to build in order to organize families or parents in the communities to get them on board?
Well, there's a lot of things. I think one, you know, you need to know your community. And so it takes a lot of time to really build relationships and build trust. I personally think that in order to be a good organizer or to be a good school, you really need to provide what the community needs. Mm-hmm. And so having a good meeting means having food at that meeting. It means meeting their immediate needs. So, yes, it's a poor community. Yes, there are families that are alternative or however you want to say it. But, you know, a single mom can be the best leader in a community because they've gone through it all. They have coping skills and they're already a leader within their home. And so translating that into a meeting or into a press conference is not that hard because they already have a lot of the skills that they need.
Are they learning to see education as a right?
Well, I think the idea of having rights is something that we talk about all the time. Actually, next week we're starting our parents' rights workshops. So those are workshops where we have 20 to 30 parents from all over the neighborhood, and we literally go through the Bill of Rights for Parents that is published by the Department of Education, and we go through and we show examples of what their rights are. For example, they have a right to have translation at all of their meetings. A lot of schools don't do that. And so we have a very interesting conversation and debate about what's a right and what's an entitlement and what if schools aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing? So we really teach them advocacy skills. But then the point of the workshop is also to see that, you know, what's happening in one school is very similar to what's happening in another school. And it's not about individual problems or individual teachers or individual principals. It's about some systemic problems that exist in the community and throughout the city. And so we talk about how to organize to make changes.
You're a white woman.
Yeah.
Entering in this community, I don't know if you speak Spanish or not, mm-hmm. but when you enter in this community, is there a skepticism about that you'll never understand what it's like to be in the Bronx?
I think my whiteness and my class are two issues that I thought about a lot when deciding to work in the Bronx. And I think what really matters is the passion and the skills that you bring to the table. Obviously, I can never relate to, I won't be able to relate to someone from the community in the way that someone who shares race or language or religion or class with them. So in ways, in some ways it has been a challenge. But I think the way I'm received from members of the community is usually with curiosity and sometimes surprise that I'm there, that I speak Spanish, that I know what's going on in the neighborhood. But then once they get to know me, they realize that I'm in it for the right reasons and that what really matters is organizing to make the schools better. And when we talk about that and we talk about what the kids need to get a better education and to have more success, then the relationship is on a roll.
Let's get utopian for a finale here. When you say a better schools, what does that really mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot about it from the parents' perspective. I think, and we actually just did this exercise in a meeting, I think it would mean having the supports for parents and for students. So that means way more guidance counselors. That means social workers. That means meetings for parents that actually encourage them to talk about their concerns, their doubts, their critique of the school, and not just talk at them about resources that they should utilize, but really engage them in what the school should look like, what the curriculum should look like. I think for students, there should be smaller class sizes. There should be more time in the school day. One of the campaigns we had last year was to extend the school day because the time that it is that kids are in school now was actually created 100 years ago when the idea is that they would go to school and then go into the farm and work for the rest of the day. You know, times have really changed, but the hours of the school day have not. And so we were really promoting a longer school day with more arts, more music, more gym, more time to get the kids out of the classroom and moving and thinking and really get that critical thinking going that now it seems like schools are teaching less and less.
What's the situation with the public schools in your community? Email us at radio@maryknoll.org or go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org, or you can call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. Well, that concludes today's program. Carl Glickman, Dan Abramowski, and Lauren Morse are just a few of the many voices of our world. I'm your host for this week's show, Eileen Bott. This program was produced by Michael Ramadan Jones. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Mary Knoll, this station, or this website. You can visit us at www.voicesofourworld.org, where you can listen, learn more about our program, or subscribe to our podcast. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.